drinking town with a football problem. Hey everybody, welcome to the Piffles Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
Back from faking sick. It's Ferlin.
You probably just had cramps.
Can we get one of those like TSN counters on how many times the word cramps comes up today?
That's going to be a lot. Bing. Take a shot every time you hear the word cramps tonight.
Yep. Okay, I'm Amy.
Make sure you like us on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
Follow me at Safamod.
Myself at Fernie635.
And I am at CFL Hottieball.
Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram, just search PifflesPod. Make sure you check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. Lots of great content going on there. And as always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett.com. Coming up on this week's show, we're going streaking. Two games is just back-to-back wins. Three is a streak. We're going to talk about the Riders winning the Labor Day Classic over the Bombers, 38-24. Riders boosting their record to 5-4. First time over 500 since late 2014, so that's great. We're going to preview the Riders Banjo Bowl game in Winnipeg this upcoming Saturday. Have an entrance into the Hottie Bowl. I think Ferlin's got a nice rant coming up tonight. We have our Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles player profile. You're going to hear a little bit from S.A. Marabre. And Engaging with the Enemy with Troy Westwood of TSN 1290, formerly of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And of course, we have our Piffles picks. So let's get right down to it. The game against the Bombers, 38-24 in a game that kind of flattered the Bombers. That score kind of flattered them. Riders moving to 5-4, Winnipeg dropping down to 7-3. First question I always start with, who looked good?
The entire receiving corps. I mean, we had three guys over 100 yards receiving. Daron Carter making one-handed catches look simple and easy. It's kind of getting ridiculous. Please keep doing it.
I'm going to say the defense. That was a pretty dominant game from the defense against the fairly good Winnipeg offense coming into this game.
I say the team that played in the first quarter.
That was a good-looking team.
That was a good-looking team.
We were definitely coasting the rest of the game.
Yeah, you know what? The rest of it was pretty boring.
I think the second half of the game was entirely Ferland's fault, because right before halftime, he made a comment saying, if we score one more touchdown, we're going to hit our average for the season at home. And then the second half happened.
Way to go, Ferlin.
At least we hit our average thanks to that rouge near the end.
Which was a huge point, by the way, because it made it a 14-point game, not just a 13-point game. So if Winnipeg somehow scored two touchdowns in the last minute again, that at least saved us going into overtime. Who looked good for me? The athletic therapists, because they miraculously helped McKenna Henry and Eddie Steele and S.A. Marabre get back on the field after they went down to injuries. So
they got a good workout.
Good job, athletic team.
And one more look good. Our boy Dariush Bladek. Labatt went down once in that game. As a starting center, I was a little bit worried, but then Bladek started warming up on the near the sideline, snapping to Glenn, and he looked pretty good for the few plays he was in.
There's one very obvious person we're missing, and I agree. Shout out to Dariush for stepping in there. But Ed Gainey.
He's a ball hawk.
Ever since he was called out, he's been done nothing but pick the ball. Six interceptions, could have had
three more
in the last 3 weeks. Like,
what's the record for this for a season?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Great question.
We'll look that up while we continue. I'll randomly shout it out during the show.
Okay, well, while you're looking for that, who looked bad? Did anybody
Winnipeg?
Look bad? Winnipeg did look bad.
Our fans looked a little bit bad, seeing after the game that we only got to 104 decibels on their.
Did we ever honestly think that Regina was the loudest stadium?
Oh, God, no. And
there was no question.
Especially prior, after it got kind of run away in the first quarter, there was no way we were getting very loud.
Prior to IGF, I think we had the loudest fans. That place is built to be loud. And there was never a question that Winnipeg was going to win this contest. I mean,
really,
unless,
though,
of course,
they have
we go
an unfair advantage because they know the number that they have to beat.
Yeah, but I said that on Twitter and somebody responded, but what good is a target if you're just being loud? Well,
that's
you know where you have to get.
That's the point of the game.
It's like being the spinner on the Price is Right wheel. If the last guy is sitting there at 90 cents, you know you got to spin again if you only get 90, right? You know your target.
But that's the whole point of this competition, is who's the loudest.
I didn't respond. I was like, because you have a target, that's why it's unfair. But they're going to beat us, and it's not going to be close. But
I'm not mad about it. I can talk today.
As long as we get the win, I don't care how much louder they are. For me, who looked bad, and I don't think they look bad. They've been quiet this year, the linebacking crew. We just haven't really heard much of them this year, which is not a bad thing by any means.
15 interceptions, Al Brenner. Carry on.
What year?
God damn it. Just 1972.
Just say a number.
We would have believed you. The linebacking crew, there was a lot of sloppy tackling in the second half, especially between Mwamba and Igwavin. Missed a lot of tackles. Andrew Harris probably should have been stopped a lot earlier than he was. Moved the chains a couple times because of that. And I think a lot of the time, especially with a big lead, and they did get a lot of big hits in the first half, they were going for that big hit every single time, not wrapping up properly, and that really bugged me. But, I mean, our defensive line and our secondary are absolutely carrying this defense right now, and we don't need those linebackers right now to step up. They're playing good, but they're not really making – they're not standing out anyway is my main point.
I got one more for the looked bad category. And I hate to do it. There was one instance, and I've been harping on it a couple times this year, and it goes out to Chris Jones. Why do we keep putting in Vernon Adams with that quarterback change? I don't like it anytime it happens. We haven't been successful on it yet. I know the one time it works, we'll hear, he's a genius, it was a great call. It's not working. You're pulling a quarterback that's marching the team down the field. Why are you putting in a cold quarterback? I understand the whole option, package, and it works. And it worked when they had Riley and James Franklin. It's not working yet with Bridge or Vernon Adams.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems with Vernon Adams is he's had the playbook for 2 or 3 weeks now. He doesn't know enough to actually know enough plays to pass the ball yet, so they're just letting him run the ball. And
that's why it's a terrible decision. Yeah. Because you're putting in a guy who he's likely going to either roll out and pitch it or roll out and keep it. I will harp on that one like we did with the three-man rush until either A, it starts working, or B, they stop it. And with Chris Jones, we know it's going to be either it stops working or it starts working or he continues to do it anyways.
Another questionable thing from the coaching staff, and it's been a problem for Jones's whole head coaching career, I believe, his clock management is pretty awful.
At the end of the first half, that was embarrassing. They had over a minute with the ball on their own, 40-yard line, something like that, to try and get into field goal range. And yeah, they were going against the wind, but there was no urgency from the offense to try and move that ball until there was 12 seconds left. And I'm sitting there, and I remember it was quiet, and I'm just in my head, I'm like, tick, 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 tick. And in between two plays, they let 30 seconds come off the clock. That was three plays right there of them just standing at the line and not snapping the ball.
And to me, the worst part about that, along with the clock management, was the last play call of the half. We're at, the 40, 41-yard line? I get not throwing the field goal or kicking the field goal. That's the right call. But why do the little dump off and basically end the half?
Yeah, chuck it up.
Go for the Hail Mary. We saw it work against us with Calgary. Was that last year, the year before? What's the worst that happens? You take a pass interference penalty in the end zone. Use your challenge, right? Like, I don't get that dump off, but it's really hard to harp on a coaching staff that's finally got us above 500 for the first time since 2014 and in a playoff spot.
That's right. Riders holding on to the fourth spot in the West right now, which means a crossover spot.
I prefer first in the East.
Riders holding on to first in the East right now, which is really third in the East because they don't get a home game because of that. But
and the parade route is already mapped out.
Oh, that was mapped out after the BC game. Anytime the Riders win, the parade map is out.
you got to check it over for deficiencies.
The parade map is just extended now. It's now not just the Green Mile. It's now the entire length of Albert Street. Hmm. By the end of the season, it'll likely go from the Legislative Building all the way to Saskatoon.
That'd be one hell of a parade. and the one other thing before everybody watched the game. Everybody saw how it played out. The Riders absolutely dominated, especially, I mentioned five plays that basically turned the game around, and that was the Roosevelt touchdown, the interception by Ganey right after that, the touchdown by Rob Bagg right after that, sorry, by Vernon Adams, and then there was the Dembski punt return, and then the Rob Bagg touchdown. That all happened within about 4 minutes, and there was three touchdowns there. That was the game right there.
And so, kudos to Rob Bagg for coming in hot after that touchdown.
He was not happy after his touchdown, and he didn't even join the conga line dance. He stood at the back, and then he just walked away from it.
And there was the other touchdown. I think, was it his touchdown or the one to follow where there was that you could see the receivers were getting excited to do some form of touchdown dance? He's like, nah, and just walks away.
He's like having a crotchety old man these days.
He is having none of that.
Old man yells at cloud.
Don't call him old, though.
Oh, no.
Make sure you at him if you do.
No respect.
I mean, he'll find it anyway.
Yeah, he'll find it. Now, the other main thing to come out of this game, obviously, is the Daron Carter spitting incident where allegedly a Bomber fan spit on him pregame while he was high-fiving fans in Pill Country. And Gaynor almost getting his head taken off by a Bomber fan.
I thought it was after he got his touchdown.
Yeah. No. It was before. He came out the other day at practice. He clarified that it was pregame.
Oh.
And he got security and they escorted the guy out.
Okay.
So they're not pressing charges. He doesn't want charges pressed. They got him banned from the stadium, I guess. And he said, that's enough. And the quote that he had, it was actually really good. He goes, man, it's just spit. Like it's, he goes, like it's not a big deal, but you still can't do that.
Don't spit on people.
It's pretty degrading. It's not something you should do to somebody.
I think it's awful. I think it's ridiculous to see that happen. I really hope, because we saw the Riders and Rod Peterson kind of poke the bear a little bit, saying they really wouldn't want to be buzzing Boomer this weekend going into Winnipeg.
Well, tell me how Winnipeg would feel if a Rider fan was there and they tried to clothesline Buzz or Boomer and take their helmet off.
My only concern is I really hope that kind of comment doesn't get a Rider fan going, oh, I could retaliate. I got that, right? When Rider Nation, when you get out to Winnipeg, go out there, have a great time. Don't be stupid. But we know there's going to be that one or that 0.1% that's going to do something stupid. Just like those two Bomber fans or however many it were that made stupid things happen, those don't define their fan base. Let's call it what it is. It's a couple of morons.
Now, before we get to actually talking about the Banjo Bowl coming up and the roster moves there, I want to ask you guys one question here. And this goes back to a player who's on the team right now, but he's back on the six-game injury list. And that's Chad Owens. And with all these injuries, you think maybe we're going to see him on the field, right? But he's back on the six-game injury list. Who knows if we're going to bring him off early. Are we ever going to see Chad Owens in a Rider jersey in a game?
I hope so.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, unless we get a Edmonton-like rash of injuries to end the season.
I just hope so.
Can you make the Hottie Bowl from the cold tub?
Oh, yeah, you can.
Oh, good. All right, there.
As long as you post pictures of yourself in said tub.
Well, he actually has posted pictures of himself in said tub. But what's his nuts made it last year?
Chad Kackert, who wasn't even on a team.
He was on the practice roster for a little bit last year.
What's his nuts?
Don't you ever say what's his nuts?
I do.
I'd say it all the time.
You say it when you're referring to hot guys.
I guess I do.
Yeah. I think we do see him late in the year, but it's not going to be anytime soon.
I've seen people calling that they're going to see him. It doesn't matter if he comes back healthy for the playoff game, if we ever get there. That's when they'll start him. Even if he's not healthy until, game one of the playoffs, that's when you'll see him. I look at those people going, no.
They wouldn't throw him.
There's no chance you put a guy who hasn't seen the field in a year and a half on the field in the playoffs. As long as our games are meaningful at this point, I don't think we see him.
What's wrong with him?
It's his foot. He broke his foot last year in Hamilton.
Right.
Because what it seems like, he gets healthy, goes hard at practice once, he can't go back to it the next day.
Do we need him right now, though?
We don't.
Right now, no. The only thing we could really use him for is kick returns. On offense, I don't see a spot where he fits in, especially with Caleb Hawley going to be playing this week. Our offense, our receivers are loaded, and he doesn't fit in there. And are we really going to bring him in just for kick returns only? I don't think so. They'll just go with Keenan LaFrance, Daron Carter on punts, and Greg Morris.
when we're getting decent return volume from them, there's no reason to.
Yeah, we've had no issues with our special teams. If we were getting nothing on returns, then I can see them trying to, you know, push forward him coming back a little bit earlier. But I don't see a spot where he fits. And I was totally for the signing when he signed here, and I'm still for it because I still think he does have something to add, but I just don't see it right now.
Well, why bother putting his salary against the cap? Because you have to when you take him off the six game, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah, right now he'd be one extra game because they just put him back on. But yeah, maybe he'd be the guy that could finally, you know, beat a punter.
That's happened, what, 4 times this year?
God.
But anyway, I mean, we won't see him this game anyway. Speaking of this game, the Banjo Bowl coming up on Saturday at 1 o'clock, which is part of a triple header, and I am ridiculously pumped for that because I have Saturday off, so I am...
And there's going to be a dog at our house.
Hashtag Grey Cup fat up. Like, I am, like, chips and nachos and cheese, and yes, you name it, the beer is going to be there, and yeah, it'll be great.
So party at Alex's house. Got it.
Yeah, only the dog is invited.
And me?
Well, you live there, so by default, unless I change the locks, but I'm not a handy person, so...
Okay.
Anyway, this game, can the Riders win back-to-back road games against a very good team in Winnipeg?
Nope.
It's really weird. 2 weeks ago, we hadn't beat a Western team on the road since, was it 2014?
2014.
And now I'm sitting here thinking we absolutely could win 2 Western road games in a row.
What's going on? But the Banjo Bowl?
The Banjo Bowl is not like Labor Day. We are statistically better in the Banjo Bowl than the Bombers are at Labor Day. Over the last 13 years, we've won, what, 12 Labor Days?
Yeah.
And either 6 or 7 Banjo Bowls.
Yeah, we've won 5 of the last 9.
We've won that
many.
Yeah. 5 of 9, 3 of 6, and I think 6 of the last 13. So, I mean, it's a toss-up a lot more than Labor Day has been.
Hmm.
It's not like, yeah, I could see it happening. No, it's not a gimme at all.
And this crowd is going to be amped, especially with what happened, the fake injuries and just how amped this game normally is. It's been sold out for a couple weeks now. This is going to be an intense game. Not to mention, if the Riders win, they're only half a game back of the Bombers with the season series in hand. And the Riders have a game in hand, which means they win that game in hand, they jump past Winnipeg in the standings.
And speaking of amped crowd and fake injuries, I got to say it's absolute garbage. There's a radio station in Winnipeg that's getting people to print out red cards.
Come on, that's funny.
The only thing I don't agree with is mocking injuries of any type.
That's funny because the Bombers have their hashtag for the W this year. There was a video I saw after the Labor Day game, some Rider fan finding all the Bomber fans. He had, you know, the little sign holders that we had to do the
yeah,
stunt
he
cards?
Made L's.
He made L's out of them and he was handing them out here for the L. That was hilarious.
See, and I'm okay with that. And I'd be okay with that in reverse. But mocking an injury or potential injury, a little classless.
Okay, these injuries, though, that happened during the game.
He lost his finger Band-Aid.
Finger condom.
They're not... It was ridiculous. Let's call it what it is. It was stupid. Great strategy to stop the Bombers' hurry-up offense, but it got pretty ridiculous.
But what you're going to see fans doing is a Rider is going to go down with, you know, a potential broken leg or something, and they're going to start holding these cards up and look like assholes.
It's still going to be kind of funny, though.
I mean, it'll be funny because they look like assholes, but...
Who's the guy, though, that actually hurt himself and just hopped off the...
That was Cameron Marshall.
That so looked ugly.
He was actually hurt.
And
speaking... He hopped on 1 foot, half a field off the...
And I was yelling, go down, save yourself here, especially when we were in... I think that was at the end of the half when we were doing our
right in
bad
front
clock
of us.
Management.
I can't remember when that was.
But that was near the end of the first half.
Well, it wouldn't have been that close to the end of the because it was about the 20-yard line right in front of us because I saw the handoff and he immediately went down. So it might not have been the last drive, but it could have been the second.
It was near the end anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to this game. We win this game. We have the season series. That's absolutely huge because looking at that, we have the season series against BC already wrapped up. We have a great head start on the season series against Edmonton because we only play them twice this year and we already beat them by 23 points. So Edmonton has to beat us by 23 or 24 at least to win the season series against us. So even if we lose against them by 10 points, we still win the season series. win this game against Winnipeg, we have the season series against them. And at the end of any tie with those three teams, we're ahead of them in the playoff race.
That just feels weird.
And it doesn't feel like they should, only having a 5-4 record right now.
Still first in
the East. It's an absolutely huge game. Riders win this, they're a half game back with a game in hand. They win that game, they have the tiebreak over Winnipeg.
And you look at our schedule coming up.
We got the East teams.
Yeah, we got Hamilton, Calgary, Ottawa, Toronto, Ottawa. I mean, that's looking like a pretty friendly schedule for
realistically,
a team that's crushing West teams.
Yeah, that's a 4-1 record we're looking at realistically in that.
Back at CFL week, I told Justin Dunk that I predicted 10 wins for the Riders, and I stuck with that, you know, in the preseason on our show.
We don't look so stupid saying that, yeah, now, do we?
Nine games, halfway through the season, I got 5 wins. Next 9 games, I got a good shot for another 5 wins.
And we're the homers.
Yeah.
Who would have guessed again that I would be the one underpicking the Riders with wins? What is going on here?
I want to know what's going on with these injuries, and that's the next question I have about this Boundary Bowl. Will injuries catch up? So Cameron Marshall, as mentioned, it looked like a torn ACL right off the bat. From the sounds of it, it's not. They're not saying anything, but he's out 2 to 3 weeks with a knee injury. So hopefully it's only 2 to 3 weeks, because he's been absolutely integral in our offense, and he's been very, very good for us.
They've said not Achilles, and that's it. Not Achilles in 2 to 3 weeks.
Well, I could have told you that at the game when he was clutching his knee. So they're being super coy about it right now, and that's fine. No need to get that out of the woodwork until it's official, I guess. But Marshall's out. Nick Dembski's also going to be out this game, and also defensive tackle Nick James. So with the roster shaken up, you're going to have Keenan LaFrance starting at running back with Greg Morris backing him up. So we add a national there. You're going to take away that national with Nick Dembski. You're going to put in Caleb Hawley. He's been taking the number one team routes in his place. So there's the saw-off there. Nick James is out. So, I mean, we had a big rotation of defensive tackles already. That's what's going to happen again. Eddie Steele, S.A. Marabere, and the other Canadian that I'm blanking on.
McKenna Henry.
And we might even see Ivan Brown. He was taking a lot of team one reps throughout the practice week. So I don't know, maybe he draws in. How important are these injuries? Like, are they going to cost this team?
I'm going to look at the offense first. Having that national running back is kind of a huge, you know, swing, you know, not an expected national spot. So it gives you an advantage that you can play those 5 international receivers. But is LaFrance an equal talent to Cameron Marshall? Are we going to see a drop-off in our limited running game that Winnipeg is just going to rush the passer and those receivers aren't going to have enough time to get open anyways?
I don't think it's so much the running game that's going to hurt. It's the passing game with Cameron Marshall out as a blocker, because he was very underrated as a blocking back. We don't know really what Keenan LaFrance can do. That's where Cameron Marshall's injury hurts the most, in my opinion.
And we might actually see a lot more Spencer Moore, and just for blocking, having him on the line, even if he lines up as the starting running back, and I say starting in quotes, like put him out there. That's just an extra old lineman, essentially.
I think there's a good saw off with the lost blocking, but having a guy like Caleb Hawley stepping in over Nick Dembski. I mean, Caleb Hawley is a top 4 receiver on probably every team in the league right now, or a good majority of them. I mean, having him step in over Nick Dembski is a huge benefit. To me, the one that hurts is Nick James.
Andrew Harris is going to run wild, because we've seen that this team, before Nick James, our defense, other than that first game in Montreal, really wasn't that good. I mean, they're clicking now, so maybe that momentum and that consistency, that keeps up, but that's a huge, huge loss. This guy was plugging holes. He made the 3-man rush work, and I hate the 3-man rush, but it worked with him because he was taking 2 to 3 guys, letting Willie Jefferson go 1-on-1. Toby Antigua, he's been a monster on the other side as well. The stats won't show it, but if you watch the games, our D-line, our D-ends have been fantastic. I attribute a lot of that to the last few games with Nick James in the middle, and that's going to be the biggest loss. Well, let's continue our talk on the Blue Bombers. Let's talk to a former one. Time now for Engaging with the Enemy.
So
Joining us this week is Bomber legend Troy Westwood. Troy, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, man.
Now, we talked to you last year around this time about the Labor Day game and Banjo Bowl. Now, before we get to this whole fake injuries thing, there's a ton of talk going on this week. Is this the most heated Banjo Bowl to date?
Yeah, this might be, huh? I suppose when you look at the game, the Labor Day game, that was arguably the two best Rough Rider Bomber teams going at it that I can remember anyway. And, you know, the week before, Spiegel and Dunnigan ranking them 2 and 3, and then you have the amount of drama that was contained within that game. So, yeah, it might all add up to the most contentious or heated situation for the Banjo Bowl, which is wonderful for both fan bases and both teams.
Now, on to the fake injuries. Rider fans are calling these fake injuries strategy to combat a hurry-up offense. And while there's nothing in the rules against this, what do you think about a team doing this?
Hey, I spoke to an ex-teammate of mine right after that game, said if we had a coach that utilized that notion that basically paralyzed what was arguably the best part of the opposing offense and it helped us to win, we'd be high-fiving it all over the locker room, right? Like a fantastic play. And what was interesting was prior to the game, on TSN 1290, when we were doing our Bomber game day, we're like, why are they dressing 8 D linemen? Right? And then, of course, you see everything unfold, and hey, and that move, as any player who has talked about it or anyone that's been around the game, that move's been around forever. You know, I remember guys on our team and coaches, great legendary coaches like Cal Murphy, utilizing it as well at times. Maybe just not to the degree that Chris Jones did. I think it's fantastic. Like you said, a coaching strategy that played a pivotal role in shutting down maybe the best part of a very successful offense in the last little bit. You got to tip your hat to taking it to that level.
So speaking of your former teammates, Doug Brown, a former teammate of yours, is calling this strategy ridiculous. But in his article this past weekend, he also admitted offhandedly that his coaches during his career suggested using it. If everyone does this type of thing, why is it such a big deal now?
Yeah, I don't know. I've read Doug's thing. Doug and I don't agree on a lot of takes sort of thing. I don't agree with what he's saying at all, saying it's ridiculous and stupid. Anytime you can stretch the rules, this is pro football, man. This isn't Mighty Mites out there, right? And everyone doesn't go have a chocolate milk and say good game after this. People are paying their mortgages and feeding their families by winning or losing. And I'm actually surprised a little bit by by some of the Bomber fans' response and like aghast by it and disgusted by this lack of sportsmanship displayed. It's just like, shut up, everybody. A fantastic coaching technique and utilizing and stretching the rules as far as you can was put into play. Now, if I'm Randy Ambrosi watching this, and the way you see for all sports across the board, hockey, football, etc., leagues do everything possible to allow offenses to flourish. That's what sells tickets. That's what gets people to watch on TV. So if I'm Randy Ambrosi watching this and going, it's very possible and most likely, I'm almost guaranteed, Chris Jones will utilize the same strategy this week and effectively again. And then other coaches are looking at it going, hey, that's, we're going to start doing that as well. If I'm Randy Ambrosi, there was a time when a guy got injured, he didn't have to sit off 3 plays, right? You just get injured, or if a coach said, take a knee, go down, whatever, you go down, come off, and then you go in the next play. Well, the 3 plays was instituted to try and cause coaches to not utilize the rule in that manner. Well, maybe if I'm Randy Ambrosi, I look at it and go, maybe it's time to put 6 plays into effect if a guy goes down an injury, or 8. Or something along those lines to protect the offensive angle of cheetah and hurry-up offenses because they do supply a lot of entertainment benefit. So if I'm Randy Ambrosi, I'm going to give a strong consideration at that. But I expect Chris Jones to do it again on Saturday. And I think other coaches will look at it. And it's, we all know that high-level sports, copycat happens, and other coaches are going to start to do the same thing.
Now, you mentioned the reactions that you're getting on Twitter. What kind of reactions are you getting?
Well, I'm speaking about it just as I spoke to you on air on TSN 1290 and anyone that talks to me on Twitter. So I'm just, no one's really come at me. I think all Bomber fans deep down know damn well they would love it if Mike O'Shea implemented that against Kevin Glenn and it stalled the offense and all the rest of it, right? And especially if you had like a Cameron Marshall during the game was getting upset about it the way Andrew Harris did. Hey, anyone who knows football knows that that is something that has been around since football began. And so to take great offense to it is kind of ridiculous. I don't know why it's so heated like that, but we all know dang well it's going to happen again here on Saturday. And I'm really intrigued. I think the very most so of this upcoming game here is, aside from the faking injury thing or utilizing that real stretch again, for Saskatchewan to send four or fewer rushers on the vast majority of the plays, what is Paul Lapolis? You saw Matt Nichols looking downfield, and he had time, and he just couldn't see anybody open. So what is Paul Lapolis going to institute to allow this offense to flourish the way it was prior to last week, or is he going to be able to put something into effect? I think that's a real interesting part of this game on Saturday.
So what's the vibe like in Winnipeg right now leading up to this game?
Well, I don't know what the general public feels like then, but I know I'm pretty nervous. Because of the 35-19 now since the Labor Day game started, and now having won 12 of the last 13, I believe it is, Saskatchewan, they've always dominated on Labor Day, by and large. So I thought that with the emotion, and from what I had seen in the previous two games against Edmonton and BC, I thought Saskatchewan would win that game on Labor Day. And prior to what I witnessed on Sunday, I thought the Bombers would come back to the Banjo Bowl and win. I still believe the Bombers are able to pull it out because of the great emotional advantage, and it is truly almost a 13th man on the field when you get the noise and everything going on. But my goodness, the Saskatchewan looked good. That defense, everybody knew dang well that Chris Jones at some point in time would catch traction with the personnel and the defense. And it just took longer. Nobody thought 5-13 year one and some of the troubles during the season and all the rest of it, and then the early struggles here. But you got Kevin Glenn playing at a certain level. You got either the best or the second best receiving core in the CFL, and arguably just under Calgary defensively. Certainly Calgary and Saskatchewan have separated themselves from the rest of the league defensively. And I look at it and I wonder, where is it exactly that the Bombers are going to make things up here outside of having this home field advantage? The Saskatchewan defense is going to be able to take advantage of the Saskatchewan offense will be able to take care of an advantage of these Bomber defense. Teams have been doing it all year long. I'm not sure where the opening is for the Bomber offense to take advantage of that Saskatchewan defense. So I think the Bombers are likely to win a squeaker. I might change my mind by the time Saturday comes around, though, because of how strong and dominant Saskatchewan has looked.
So should Saskatchewan end up winning this game, they would have the season series against Winnipeg and be half a game back with a game in hand. Is this game a must-win for the Bombers?
Yeah, as much as it can be at this time of the season, I agree 100% with that, man. Like, Saskatchewan's coming in, there's blood in the water, and there are a bunch of sharks coming into Winnipeg going, hey, we're almost playing in house money here. Either team, I think at the end of these 2 weeks, either team to start with would have got, yeah, we'll take a 500 here, a win and a loss, and just escape and go back to our normal schedule. But Saskatchewan, and where they're at, like what you're saying, all of a sudden they become real relevant and a threat to go capture second place. And the sort of momentum that they put together, how they're just beating up the last 3 weeks, Edmonton, B.C., Winnipeg, just munching up the West Division here, it's just dangling there for them to keep going forward. And you look at the Bombers, all of a sudden kind of nervous, and that's 7-2 to some degree with smoke and mirrors, and you're talking winning four games in the last play of the game, and that Bomber defense has been sort of an Achilles heel or an anchor for the whole season where the offense is making up for it. But yeah, it's real early, and I suppose as much as the game could be a do-or-die type situation or a must-win type situation, things get real ugly for the Bombers if they drop this one on Saturday.
Well, it should be one hell of a game. And Troy, before we let you go, we've got a few more questions for you, lightning round style, if that's all right.
Okay.
What's the best movie ever?
Jiminy Crickets. I'm a movie buff, bro. And you know what? I'm like answering that question sort of for the lengthy response. It's like asking me the best song ever. I need to break it down to genre. But right off the top of my head, if I want to take everything into consideration, I'm going to have to say The Godfather.
Right. We won't ask you best song ever. Most embarrassing song on your iPod.
Probably Chiquita from ABBA, The Damn Near Brings Me to Tears.
Last meal of the day, is it called supper or dinner?
It's called the protein shake, brother. The last thing I take before I go to bed for about 30 years. I wake up, protein shake, I cut off carbs at about 3 p.m., and I'm going protein shake is the last thing I do before I go brush my teeth and hit the pillow.
Butter tarts. Raisins in them or no?
Oh, sure, yeah. I'll take some raisins.
Pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes, please.
And finally, dogs or cats?
I hate cats. Give me dogs.
That's the correct answer. You win the bonus round.
Nice.
Troy, thanks for so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And this is going to be one hell of a game on Saturday coming up.
Yeah, take care, boys. Let's all have a... Hey, I know, just real quick, I know there's a couple of unfortunate incidents here with the fans spitting on Dron Carter, and I don't doubt that happened at all. And the fans being stupid with Gaynor. There's a young man or woman in there, probably younger, just doing their job, right? So let's all have a good... I know that the vast majority, 99%, on both sides of the border on that game, whether it's the Classic or it's the Banjo Bowl, most everybody out there is having fun, but let's keep it... Let's keep it safe and be responsible and have good-hearted fun this Saturday.
You're absolutely right. Thanks so much, Troy.
Take care, guys.
There is Troy Westwood, formerly of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and now of TSN 1290 in Winnipeg, here on Engaging with the Enemy.
Coming up next, we have the Hottie Bowl. In honor of back-to-school week, we give out our mid-season report cards and this week's Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile and much more. Stay tuned.
Piffles Podcast is supported in part by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. A longtime volunteer with your Regina Thunder, Bryn is a proud supporter of local football. Check out BrynWerrett.com, that's BrynWerrett.com, while you enjoy the rest of this episode of the Piffles Podcast. Back into it, let's get to the Hottie Bowl. I like you a lot, lot, all we want
is hot, hot. Boys, boys, boys!
Well, this week our boy was born March 25th, 1993. He's just a little kid. In Spicer, Minnesota. He played three seasons at Concordia College from 2013 to 2015, recording 120 receptions for 1,932 yards, 18 touchdowns in 29 games. He signed in the CFL as a free agent on May 30th, 2016, began the season on the practice roster, was activated in week 14, and I guess the rest, as we say, is history. He is 6 feet, 3 inches, 220 pounds. He is number 83, wide receiver for the Edmonton Eskimos, Brandon Zylstra. You can follow him on Twitter at BrandonZylstra3. And with that pick, I guess I'm done with the Eskimos.
That's everybody for the Eskimos already?
Three.
And another receiver.
Yep.
Interesting.
Though I'm sticking him in as a slot back.
He's played great this year, and he's part of the Edmonton Eskimos' success.
There are so many inappropriate jokes I could make with your last comment. I can't do it. It's a family-friendly show.
Sticking him in as slot back?
So there's a few. I can't do it.
Two receivers from Edmonton. Fidel Hazleton and now Brandon Zylstra.
Something in the water over in Edmonton.
I'm not mad about it.
Welcome to the Hottie Bowl, Brandon Zylstra.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they continue to use him now with Darrell Walker coming back from the NFL and signing with the Eskimos. And that brings up a little debate. Who has the best receiving core in the CFL?
I got to admit, I stuck my foot in my mouth today forgetting that one of the rider receivers follows me on Twitter when I made a comment saying I think they have the best receiving core in the league with the best quarterback in the league, and they're going to be scary. And I got a response back that was deleted not long after, but quickly reminded me that I'm followed by a few of the players now. I was like, oh, yeah.
Honestly, toss up between them and the Riders, and BC right behind them for best receiving core in the league, in my opinion.
If you,
Bowman, Walker, Zylstra, Duke Williams, Hazleton, Kenny Stafford as depth. The only thing they're missing is a very solid Canadian. They have Chambers and Getzlaff, but let's be honest here, those guys aren't what they used to be.
Remember what I said last week? This Hottie Bowl is not a skills competition.
There's hope for us yet.
Sorry.
Just saying.
If you take the top three from each team, I think Edmonton has the top receiving core.
I agree.
But it's pretty damn close between those three.
I would take Rob Bagg over their depth. I would take Caleb Hawley as a fourth, way above their fourth. But it's an embarrassment of riches in receiving corps in the West Division. Like, they're... Can't go wrong with either of them.
And don't forget to mention the Ottawa Red Blacks. They have a pretty good receiving corps, too. And if we don't mention them, they'll be a little bit upset.
They will make sure and mention them for you. I actually put up the poll earlier today, and I was just going to go look and see where that poll was at. And within 5 minutes, I had the Lumberjoes didn't like my choices because I said Riders, Eskimos, Lions, Other. And he tagged all of the members of the... The Red Blacks.
Other than their top two, they don't have anything close to what we have in the West. Welcome to the Hottie Bowl, Brandon Zylstra.
Yep.
Don't forget, you can get your Hottie Bowl merchandise at piffles.com/shop. Check it out in the shop on the website. Time now for this week's Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile. I really want to know. This week on the Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile, we learn more about defensive lineman S.A. Marabare.
All right, so we're joined by Riders defensive lineman S.A. Marabare for their Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile. S.A., first question. People are still having trouble pronouncing your name. Yes. Straight from you, how is it done properly, and what's the worst version you've ever heard?
Okay, so it's properly pronounced S.A. Marabare. So S.A. Marabare. The worst I've heard... It's just recently from the TSN crew, Issa Marabare. They get the last name right, but the essay part, it's like I've heard like Issa, Issy, Issey.
Now that's the easy part.
That's the easiest part, literally. It's three letters, E-S-E, pronounce how it looks.
Now we have to ask, on Sunday, Labor Day, you're obviously playing with a broken hand. Some Bomber fans accused you of going down with a fake injury because you were smiling when you got up.
Apparently.
Why were you laughing, and or not laughing, but were you faking it?
I was not faking it, to answer that question. But our equipment guy, Trevor, he likes to keep our heads in positive spirits. So he cracked a joke with me on the inside in that little huddle up because I have a sleeve on my finger on the inside of this little club thing. And we took it off at halftime, and we were making jokes. I don't know. Can I use the word condom? I mean, yeah. So finger condom. Whether to keep it on or not, I decided to take it off, and it just so happens as I take it off, that happened in the later stages of the game, so I should have kept it on.
How much did your Twitter blow up after that from Bomber fans, and do you even care what they said to you?
It blew up. It was pretty crazy because I saw the initial pictures, like the four pictures of the close-up of my face, the close-up of our trainer, his face as well, and then there was like little threads with every single comment. So I was actually sitting at my house with my girlfriend, and I was going over each comment, and she kept looking over like, stop looking. Well, don't worry about it. Like, those comments do not bother me, like, even at the slightest. I like to poke fun as well, so I'll give them a little bit back, talk back. Obviously keep it as respectful as possible because, you know, it's just a game, and sportsmanship is the biggest part of this game. And, you know, I like to keep it clean and fun and just enjoy myself.
Now, to get away from Sunday, why did you get into football in the first place?
The people around me, really. I can't pinpoint one exact person, but someone that's close to me right now, Enoch Mwamba, we go way back. I mean, I met his little brother when I was in the eighth grade and he was in the seventh grade. They were in high school. They were doing their football thing. I kind of idolized that, looked up to them. A couple of my friends at school, they're like, oh, you're so big, you should try to play football. Because I used to play basketball and soccer, so they're like, you should try football. I tried it out, didn't like it. Met Enoch Mwamba, Koshi Mwamba, and Kelvin Mwamba, the Mwambas, and they really kind of, on a personal level, pushed me into getting into football with their work ethic and how much fun they were having with it. So I just rolled with it.
So then what does it mean to you to play with them?
Crazy. It's crazy. Like, when we signed him last year, I mean, I was talking to him, obviously, back and forth as well. But when he finally made the decision to come, it was like, you know what? It was just like, man, one of your boys is coming through. I've been through with him. I've been through it with him for so long. So it was really like a happy moment for me and him as well, and our families, because we're family friends and everything too. So it was pretty cool.
Now, take us through a normal day off for you. What are you doing?
Absolutely nothing.
Like Netflix.
Yeah. So I'll come in, get my treatment, watch some film, maybe lift. But when I'm at home, like feet up, TV's on, I'm usually watching my Cody. Series that I'm watching right now, well, I just finished watching Power. My girlfriend's trying to get me to watch Game of Thrones, but I can't. I tried, and it's just not working out for me. Big Brother, that's a big thing for me.
You still watch Big Brother?
Yes.
Really?
So me and my whole family, we used to watch it, like, all the way up until season 5. It was like a nightly routine. Like, we would all get home from work, school, sit down, watch Big Brother. I fell off for a little bit, and then a friend of mine posted a snap of Big Brother 19. And I was like, whoa, it's already at 19? I might as well get back on it. And I'm happy I did, because I'm enjoying this season a lot.
I'm a fan of it myself. Who's your pick to win this year?
Man, I think Paul's going to get away with it. But I don't know. I feel like there's just so many, like, back doors, and I don't know, it's a lot of excitement. But I hope Paul wins, because, I mean, he lost last year, and it makes sense for him to win. But I feel like there's some other guys that are conspiring around behind him.
Survivor's coming up right away. That's where I'm at.
Now you're at home for a night out. You don't want to cook. You're going to order out. What are you ordering in?
Mr. Mike's. Mr. Mike's Steakhouse. I live in Harbor's Landing, so it's right there. I usually get the Buffalo ribs, sweet potato fries, maybe a side of gravy if I'm feeling like it. But for the most part, I'm getting the ribs. Ribs and sweet potato fries.
Play video games?
Yes, I do.
What do you play?
Call of Duty, Infinite Warfare. I'm trying to get Madden 18 by this weekend. And FIFA. I'm a big FIFA guy.
You ever play against Ochocinco? Because he takes on everybody online.
I heard. I'm going to take my shot. I got a PS4. Do you know what he plays?
I think he's on PS4.
PS4? All right. I'm going to find his PSN and challenge him, possibly.
Now, for you, who is your biggest hero?
My biggest hero, can I say heroes?
Absolutely.
My parents. My mom and dad, they're just an amazing, amazing, amazing people. They really paved the way for me, my brother, and my sister. And just seeing everything that they do. I'm the oldest sibling, and I've seen it all, how they've treated me, my brother, my sister, all my cousins, aunts and uncles that we've had that immigrated to Canada. They've taken care of them, and just, they're just such amazing people. I idolize them from head to toe. Everything about them, I love it. Such caring people, selfless people, very strong, very powerful, and I just love them to death.
What's the hardest thing you've ever had to do in your life?
The hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life? I think most recently was making the jump from BC to coming here. I was their first round draft pick. And there was a lot of speculation as to me being a bust and not really being deserving of being in the first round or being a first round pick. So when I was making that decision to leave, I was really just going off of my own self-confidence, really. I didn't play too many snaps on defense out there, so I was going based off of what I knew I could do. And Chris Jones, he believed in me. John Murphy, J.O., all those guys upstairs, they believed in me. And when we were talking, they eased me into the process, and I feel like that was my biggest leap of faith, for sure.
Is there any significance to the number 98 for you?
Not at all. All throughout college at Laurier, I was number 99. And when I got to BC, Jabari Westerman, he had 99. So they just bumped me down and gave me 98. And it's definitely grown on me.
Who controls the music in the locker room?
Most recently, Willie Jefferson.
What does he play?
Whole lot of rap, hip-hop. We change it up, though. So it's not always straight hip-hop. It's not always straight rap. We got some old school going, usually 2 or 3 times during the week. But yeah, most recently Willie Jefferson has been holding it down.
And to kind of follow up on that, who has the most embarrassing song choice in the locker room? Like, somebody's got to play Taylor Swift, right?
You know what? I've walked into the locker room one time and I don't know what song was playing. It was very up tempo, but it had a little bit of that country twang to it. And I think it was, I don't even know who it was, the artist was, but I think, who put it on? I want to say Peter Dykowski put it on.
That sounds like something Pete would do.
Yeah, he was jamming so hard. So I instantly looked, and I'm like, this must be Pete's music.
Yeah. So is there one guy in the locker room who, no matter how hard you try, you can't get to stop talking?
There's a whole bunch of them.
Who's the most annoying of them?
annoying in good spirits. Most recently added defensive tackle Nick James. 1,000%. I think you can ask anybody out here right now, they'll say the exact same thing.
Okay, now we're hitting the fall season right away, and pumpkin spice everything comes out. Do you fall into that trap? Do you get a pumpkin spice latte, frap, anything like that?
No, I don't. I think I've had pumpkin pie once in my lifetime.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not.
Man, you got to hit up Costco because their pumpkin pie, that's where it's at.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, for my second pumpkin pie, I'm going to hit up the Costco that's out here, and I'm definitely going to try it out. But for the most part, no, I'm not really a pumpkin guy.
And the one question we ask every single player, most importantly, cats or dogs, and why?
Dogs, because I'm allergic to cats. And I don't know, cats are kind of creepy to me. Like, they're so silent, and they're always watching you. I feel like they're always watching me, so I don't know. They just kind of creep me out a little bit.
Essay, thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Essay Marabare here on the Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile. When Steve and I talked to him at practice on Wednesday, that pumpkin pie thing blew me away.
That blew me away.
The look on your face.
Oh my God, who's right only now? Had pumpkin pie once in their life?
Right, I can get not having it now and not being, you know, basic. And getting your PSLs and, you know, pumpkin spice Oreos and everything pumpkin spice.
Oh, but they're so good.
But who has only had pumpkin spice or pumpkin pie once in their life?
My 2-year-old crazy has had people. Pumpkin pie substantially more times than that.
Oh, I was going to say if she's only had it once in her life. She's 2.
Pumpkin pie is like you have to have it at least twice a year, Christmas and Thanksgiving.
That's it?
What is wrong
with
you?
No, at least.
Oh.
Like twice a week.
Those are the mandatory times that you must eat pumpkin pie.
I was
going to
say,
pie.
I've been on pumpkin pie watch at Costco since his birthday.
Easter time as well.
Yeah, I can accept that
that's
too.
That's absolutely the bare minimum. You have to have pumpkin pie. The appropriate number of times is as often as possible.
July 9th.
I feel like...
What's July 9th?
Who cares? It's a great day for pumpkin pie.
Oh, yeah.
I feel Tuesday like when pumpkin pie is available pie. At Costco, I buy one probably once a week.
At least. Sometimes 2 of them, depending on...
So the real question is, will there be pumpkin pie at the football party on Saturday?
Oh, we should probably get a pumpkin pie.
I guess I can buy another one.
Yep.
There's Piffles Podcast tailgate is now moving to Alex's house. Alex and Amy's house.
Piffles Podcast pumpkin pie party.
Oh, man.
With pumpkin spice lattes.
Cody. Yeah, we'll all go to Starbucks and get pumpkin spice lattes
pumpkin
and fraps
spice
before
frappuccinos.
The game.
I'm in.
Try and say Coney Island Piffle Player Profile. Wait, pumpkin. Coney Island Poutine Piffle Player Profile with pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin pie party.
Yeah. Pumpkin pie party.
Ooh.
Hey, that sounds like a great time to me.
Right? Let's do it. Now, if there's any player on the team that you'd like to hear from, let us know. And if there's a question you'd ask them, tell us what it is. We'll absolutely ask them for you. Now, I want to get to the midseason report cards because the Riders, they've finally played their 9 games, so it's the official halfway part of the season. Amy, we'll get you to do the honors for us. We'll get you to name a team, and we'll each give you a grade and one sentence why we give that grade.
A grade? I'm going to mark it with a red pen.
All right. In no particular order.
Oh, okay, then
you can put it in order. I don't care.
Toronto Argonauts.
I didn't write them down. Oh, yes, I did. C+. C+.
Okay, you always have to go first now.
That's not fair.
Ferlin?
I'm going to say about a C.
C-, because they're average.
And with the three of us, they average out to C.
Yeah.
So that was your one sentence, because they're average?
Yep.
C, senor.
Hamilton Tiger Cats.
F.
Can that be my letter? Just a bunch of... F-.
I'm going to say a Q if I can, but an F.
Q. Alex.
I want to be funny and say like a D- and then be like, why? But they're a clear F.
F.
They're a dumpster fire this year.
And that's your... Because they're a dumpster fire?
Because they're a dumpster fire.
Edmonton Eskimos.
I went with a B-.
I'm going to go with a B just because they're facing a lot of injuries.
A-, because the only reason why they've lost is because of those injuries.
But you got to rank that into the report card. Those injuries matter. They count.
They'd be an A+ if they didn't lose all those injuries.
BC Lions.
I went with a C-. They just don't impress me anymore. Like Shania Twain, they don't impress me much. Break up halftime show.
I'm going with a C plus because they're still the fifth best team in the league right now.
C minus if they play Travis Lule.
And if they don't?
D.
All right. Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
C plus.
Why?
Because I think I expected them to be a whole lot worse. And they just, the way they've played up till now has impressed me enough that they've earned a few extra, you know, plus minuses.
I think he's trying to be a heel. I like it. I'm going to give them an A minus.
A minus?
They get an A. They're a good team.
Well, yeah. Here I thought you guys were thinking I was ranking them too high. So I don't like going first.
Ottawa Red Blacks.
Oh, I'm only taking their first 9 games. They don't get the extra bonus too. So they get an F.
Fair.
I'm going to give them about a C.
D. They're the best of the worst.
The best of the worst. Montreal Alouettes.
I'm going to go with C for moderately successful.
Wow, you're a little bit higher than me. I'm giving them a C minus.
They're a D. They're bordering on that dumpster fire right now with Chapdelaine throwing Durand under the bus today.
A head coach would never throw their starting quarterback under the... Oh, it's Durand.
Calgary Stampeders.
I think we can all probably agree on this, A plus, because they're the Calgary Stampeders.
A plus.
A plus, best team in the league.
And last but not least, the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
The homer in me wants to grade them a lot higher. They're B plus.
B plus at 5-4?
Yep.
All right.
They're heading in the right direction.
B plus for the same reason. They had a little bit of a slow start, but they've picked it up.
B, they should be 7-2.
There you go.
All right.
Done.
And basically, I think that reflects the standings in the league. West teams are dominating. East teams are barely getting by or failing.
Yep, there's not one grade above a C in the East.
That doesn't surprise me at all. At best, they're average.
And
their record shows it.
C minus is the worst in the West.
On average, between our three?
Well, I don't know what two C minuses and a C plus equal.
Okay.
Be about a C-ish.
Yeah.
C minus and a half.
Well, time to move on. I've been waiting for this all night. Let's get to a rant.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
So with my rant, I'm going to kind of bring us back to the start of the show, going over that Labor Day Classic, talking to Troy. Considering the Riders are coming off that huge win in that Labor Day Classic, I've been a little bit miffed since the end of that game, and there's a few reasons why. First off, the argument about who has better fans has been reignited. Why? Because of a couple incidents at the game in which Daron Carter got spit on and Gaynor almost had his head ripped off. These acts were done by two of probably a couple thousand Bomber fans that were in attendance on Sunday. Throughout the weekend, I heard a couple horror stories about Stamps fans too, harassing Eskimo fans, and over the years I've heard horror stories about pretty much every stadium in the league. In my opinion, there are no best fans and there are no worst fans. There are simply fans, the type of people who cheer on their team, talk a little smack with opposing fans, but at the end of the game, they still shake hands and have friendly conversation and are generally good people. And then there's the assholes. The people that spit on players, attack mascots, throw beer cans at opposing fans, and all that garbage that isn't necessary. I've said this multiple times over the last few days, but after the couple incidents at New Mosaic on Labor Day, the best revenge for Rider fans going to the Banjo Bowl is to go into that stadium and act like civilized adults. And then obviously there's the other thing that's got me fired up. So the Riders get that big win, and with it the potential of winning the season series, and they've gotten over 500 for the first time since 2014. I'm ecstatic after that game. Then I check Twitter on the bus ride home, and all I can see is a bunch of salty Bomber fans accusing the Riders of faking injuries a few times during the game based solely what they saw on TV. And that's what they blamed the loss on. These so-called fans looked ridiculous and childish making these claims and making it seem like the only reason they lost is due to the fact that the Riders prevented them from getting into their hurry-up offense due to these fake injuries. not because they lost the turnover battle, not because they were outscored 21-3 in the first quarter, not because their all-star running back was held to under 30 yards on the ground, not because their DBs forgot to cover Ryder receivers in the end zone, but because on three plays, defensive linemen went down with cramps. Let me tell you something about a couple of these plays. First, Eddie Steele. I was at the game. I later watched on the TV broadcast. Eddie got smacked to the ground by a Winnipeg O-lineman. Eddie may have quickly got up, but he went back to the ground pretty quickly, immediately grabbed his leg, rolled onto his stomach, and while still holding his leg, started banging his head on the ground. This is absolutely not a man who's faking. This is a man who is in extreme pain, and I can assure you from experience, a muscle cramp can cause extreme pain. I was a puddle of sweat in the stands, and I wasn't wearing full football equipment or playing an early afternoon game for the first time this season. The second instance was McKenna Henry, and I will admit it does look kind of questionable, so I'll give that one to the Bomber fans. The third one was S.A. Murabure, who we featured tonight on our player profile. This one is another one that frustrated me with the reaction that Bomber fans had. The players had begun lining up, and then Murabure had gone down. I couldn't see much at the game because it was at the exact opposite end of the field, but when I watched on the broadcast, I can tell Bomber fans were very opportunistic with their screenshots. They showed a couple pictures, one of Murabure walking off smiling, and another of a trainer smiling. When I watched the broadcast, I noticed they missed a few parts, showing Murabure first hitting his already injured hand. You can tell by the amount of tape he's wearing that it's obviously injured, on that previous play, and then him wincing in pain when he finally took a knee, and him holding his hand, trying to stretch it out a bit, wearing that ball of tape. SA also clarified later on Twitter that he and the trainer were smiling and laughing because they were joking about the finger condom that Murabure wishes he had left on at halftime. The funny part is, if this is a strategy, it failed on this play because the Bombers scored a major not a couple plays later, just as the 2007 Riders did when the Doug Brown-led Bombers did the exact same thing. So in both of these cases, whether it be the our fans are better than your fans, stay classy argument, or bending the rules is okay unless it hurts my team, this holier-than-thou garbage needs to stop. Sure, go ahead and call out other fans and other teams, but make sure you do the same thing for your own team if they pull the same thing.
I love that everybody's so salty about this. I think it's absolutely hilarious. As Troy Westwood alluded to a little bit earlier, they're stretching the rules. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with what they're doing. Is it kind of ridiculous? Yes, and I agree with that, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with faking injuries.
I think the best part about this for me is because the Riders have started winning, and Chris Jones, for the most part, has been on his best behavior this year, this was the moment that fans finally got to unleash like they did last year. And you could tell that it was just venom nonstop because it was a Chris Jones-led team. And I think that part was hilarious just because they had to wait so long. And this is the hill they decided to die on.
I would love to see Chris Jones win the Grey Cup this year, not just because I'm a Ryder fan, but all just to stick it to absolutely everybody else in the CFL that hates him.
It would be kind of cool if he did. Puts the cup down on the pedestal after holding it, turns to the fans, and full-on crotch chops.
I think there's only a couple coaches that get this much venom thrown at them. One is Chris Jones, obviously. The other is Jason Moss. He gets a lot of trash thrown at him, too.
He does?
Mm-hmm. I don't see it as much, though.
Not as much as Chris Jones, but, for example, the amount of hate after Live Mike Gate last year.
That was nothing compared to what Chris Jones gets, though.
Oh, not God, no, but after that, no other coach gets. I mean, the next closest is Wally with the get off the field.
Yeah, but people Wally. Like Wally Buono. Like, nobody actually hates him. Do they?
I don't. Wally's great.
To me, he's like another Henry Burris in the sense that it's fun to cheer against him and do the Wally chants like it was the Henry chants. Like, to me, that's... But, I mean, we talked to Wally Buono last year on the show. Great guy. Like, he's super nice. I don't know how anybody could hate him.
Let's hope the game this weekend has as much salt.
Oh, this is going to be intense. I said to Troy, this might be the best Banjo Bowl that we've seen because the lead up going into it, I don't think has ever been this venomous
And I don't remember the last time the game mattered this much.
It's been a while since this game was this big. This is a huge, huge game.
Like
Winnipeg wins, we're not going to catch them. Because we're essentially down an extra game in the standings. Even if we finish tied, we're still one game behind them with the tiebreak. We win this game, we have that tiebreak. We just have to finish tied with them.
A possible home playoff game could be decided based on what happens on Saturday. That is weird.
Yep.
When we were 2-4 going, now we're thinking about a home playoff game?
Riders have a legitimate chance at second place if they win the tiebreakers. They have a legit chance at second place. Who would have saw that coming in? I didn't see him in second place.
Looking back at it and thinking about all the importance of this game, this might be the most important Rider-Bomber game since the 07 Grey Cup.
Yeah, I think it might be.
Sorry, Amy showed a picture of a dog on a shirt dabbing.
Is that still a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Dabbing
ask
or
the
dogs?
Kids.
No, the dogs. Are dogs still a thing?
Yes.
Have you not watched the Maxtron? Every third kid is up there dabbing.
Yeah, well, I need this shirt in my
right
life.
Now.
Oh, my God.
It's a great shirt. Okay, well, let's get to our final segment here. We have our Piffles Pick'em to get to.
Oh, crap.
Too busy looking at dog shirts. Montreal at BC, Saskatchewan at Winnipeg, Hamilton at Ottawa, Calgary at Edmonton. Let's go around the horn. Montreal at BC. I'll start. BC.
I'm going to see if I can follow up my Hamilton pick with a complete flyer and go Montreal.
I hope you're right. That'd be great.
I don't know why.
Just because.
Just because why not?
Yeah, I'm going to say BC because they're probably going to win.
I didn't circle that one yet.
You should. That's the first game.
BC.
Riders at Bombers. I'm taking Winnipeg.
For the good of Rider Nation, taking Winnipeg.
I'm taking Saskatchewan.
Homer.
Absolutely.
I did too.
Yeah, but it's okay when you do.
All right.
Hamilton at Ottawa. Obviously taking Ottawa.
Do I take another flyer? Yeah, no. Hamilton's not winning two in a row. Ottawa.
Absolutely Ottawa.
I picked Hamilton.
That would be funny, and I would be very, very okay with that.
And then I giggled.
And finally, Calgary at Edmonton.
Sorry.
And finally, Calgary at Edmonton. And I'm doing this because it didn't matter to me who won the first game as long as they won the second game between them two. Calgary. Riders got a hope for a sweep.
Calgary.
Same.
All right. There we go.
When was the last time we all agreed on a pick?
Labor Day?
No, I picked Winnipeg.
Did you?
I had to.
Oh, yeah.
Idiot.
Jinx. That whole
thing. I've picked against the Riders for 3 straight weeks. You want me to pick the Riders this week?
No.
Do what you want.
No.
You're going to anyway.
All right, well, I guess we'll find out. Saturday, triple header. That's going to be absolutely fantastic. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for joining us. On next week's show, we're going to recap that Riders-Bombers Banjo Bowl. Going to preview the next Riders game against Hamilton in Hamilton Friday, September 15th, which will be at 5 p.m. We'll have Engaging with the Enemy. We'll talk to someone with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Have a rant. Our Hottie Bowl. Our Coney Island Piffles player profile. Spoiler alert, we're going to talk to star receiver Neman Roosevelt. So make sure you join in for that. Amy's sitting here dabbing, and I hope you are as well. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
Follow me at Safamod.
Myself at Fernie635.
And I am at CFL Hottie Bowl.
Make sure you like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram as well. Just search PifflesPod. Check out the website as well, PifflesPodcast.com. Not only CFL, we're going to talk on there. We're going to have a little bit of NFL in there as well. So if you like football north and south of the border, check out PifflesPodcast.com. We're going to have a whole bunch of great stuff for you there. As always, Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett.com. Thanks for listening.
We're a drinking town with a football problem.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.